Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. It's time to labrish. I hope the classic reggae sounds of Mr. Kevin MacLeod have put you in the island mood. And I don't know about your city, but here in the South, it's getting a little chilly. And I had to sort of cover up today. So now is a wonderful time for me to take a virtual trip to where we know that it may get cool sometimes, but most times at this hour of the day, the trade wind is drifting across the island, whether it was hot or cold. So I know it's still pretty warm there. And we that know what it's like to chill in the evenings are just going to take our favorite cheer and select our favorite place we would be if we were there and relax for the next hour. I hope you'll spend the next hour with me because I am very excited. We had a marvelous show last week. I hope most of the fans that came by and those that were on the board and those that participated had a good time because I certainly had a lot of fun. But I thought it was really ironic because we were talking about farming in Jamaica in the early days and the Jamaica Agricultural School of Agriculture. And just I was waiting on some other fans who were supposed to be talking about their school days. And for one thing or another, I could not get through to them. And I was a little challenged as to what we were going to do this week. And then there came across my desk this interesting story about this Jamaican, now a English farmer. And I said, how cool is this? Because I just, although I was born and raised in Kingston, I love the country. So I was really entertained and educated and just thrilled when we were talking about the farms and the farming that was going on right in Kingston while I was there and didn't know much about it. So this evening, I have paired this young maverick with someone from the past that perhaps some of our members might have be familiar with his story. But for those of you who may not be, I would like, and we've done a show about Devon House already. It's in the archive someplace. But this really brought me back to his story because he was sort of a man before his time. And as usual, I want to remind you, the listeners, that we're here each Wednesday. You're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And you are welcomed to participate in the Labrish. If I don't have a designated guest tonight, but everybody on the board is my guest. And for those of you listening online, if you would like to join the Labrish, then you'll have to pick up your phone and dial 718-766-4558, because this senior is not able to multitask on the computer and chat with you online. We do have that ability, but I'm not there yet. So do call in if you want to join the Labrish. So feel free, members, participants on the board, and I see we have calls from all over. Feel free to hit 1 on your telephone. That will give me a sign that you want to join the Labrish, and I will open up the mic to you. I ask you to just tell me your name and what city you're calling from so we can get an idea. We can get connected, even though we're all over the place. Remember, we're this evening for the next hour, we'll be in Jamaica. And when I was there, we didn't have this wonderful service that we have now where we can virtually be connected, but now we do. So I am just embracing it, and I hope everybody is enjoying it as much as I am. So I want to really start first with the Devon House story. And although I'd done it before, I seem to have found more information, because for those and anyone who want to add some spice to the story, remember, put up your hand and I'll be more than happy to welcome you. But I did find a article in a Jewish publication, and this was written by a Canadian journalist. I just want to read at least segments of it, and this is an old article. But you know, Mr. Google, if you Google anything, you get whatever was written about it, and you get the most current one. So this starts off, it says, the story of Devon House starts with George DeBell, born the son of a German Jew and a Jamaican housekeeper in 1820. His mixed parentage made his early years difficult. Taunted by his peers, young George left school at 14. At 19, he joined the crew building the Ferry Inn between Kingston and Spanishtown. And by the time he reached his early 20s, his father rewarded him Tenacity. Remember now, folks, I don't see very well, so you'll have to forgive my mispronunciation of some of the words. So, he rewarded him with enough money to buy a ship. How cool is that? One ship turned into three, and soon his fleet was trading between the other West Indian islands. When the rebel slaves of Cuba wanted guns, DeBell began delivering them aboard his ship. But that scheme came to an abrupt halt when he was thrown into a Cuban jail cell on a gunning conviction. I thought it was very ironic to know that, you know, although I saw some comments on some of the articles I read comparing him, and for your people on the board, feel free, you can Google any of this and see all the information, and it might be more precise and accurate than what I read. So I always encourage people, because I get most of my information from Mr. Google. So some of it I know is very authentic, and I'll mention the ones that I really trust and know that it's all documented and can be traced to a source. But this is just an article. Most of it, as so far I know, is correct. So I was reading a comment that someone made on a more current website, and they were comparing the people trading guns in Jamaica now to what this man did. Now, he went to a prison, I suppose, in Cuba for delivering it to the ex-slaves. But now remember, this man was of mixed heritage. So I think from his perspective, not only did he want to make money, but he was helping them with their cause. You know, just like how countries are arming other people now to rise up and stand up for what they want. So I don't want to get into politics, but I saw the relevance right here in this, you know, what I'm explaining. And remember, folks, I need to participation, so feel free to put up your hand. Back to the article. But young George wasn't all about making money. He was also a romantic who fell in love with Magdalena Baker, the Jamaican daughter of a missionary. Aware that his Cuban jail record was and mixed background didn't exactly make him an attractive prospect for a son-in-law, the young couple waited until after the death of the young lady's parents before getting married. A son and a daughter soon followed, but so did tragedy. So back to my two cents here. See, he was a smart man because, you know, sometimes you can't fight. Sometimes the timing is not right. You have to wait for the proper time. So he knew perhaps it would cause some challenges because the fact that this was in 18 whatever and he was marrying a missionary's daughter, it meant that not only was the family very religious, but quite perhaps from another country, England or wherever they came from as missionaries. It could be the United States in those days. So he was quite smart. Now, Stabel had moved to Venezuela, where his trading business flourished. However, bad weather caused one of his ships to sink off the coast of America. Miraculously, he survived only to discover he had lost everything except the money belt he tied to his waist before jumping ship. Isn't that something? Okay, with a young family in Jamaica to support, Stabel stayed in Venezuela, determined to recoup his lost fortune. Eventually, his investment in Venezuela, in a Venezuelan gold mine, paid off, and he returned to Jamaica in 1873 as a man of great wealth. But bad luck struck once again when he discovered his teenage son had died while he was away. While in his 50s, financially secure, Stabel bought sugar estates and 99 Jamaican properties. Now, local laws at that time forbade owning over 100 properties. It had nothing to do with color. That was just the law. Now, officially Jamaica's first black millionaire, the Honorable George Stabel, as he was known, was a man of respect. In 1879, he bought 53 acres of land from the St. Andrew Parish and built his dream house on the foundation that was the church rectory. He called his dream house Devon House. And for 10 years, George and his wife, their daughter and son, his son, who had become the mayor of Kingston, lived like Jamaican royalty. Now, how cool is that? Talk about getting over adversity. Now, this man was thrown in jail, almost drowned, but, you know, when you have tenacity, determination, a dream and a goal, nothing. He was unstoppable because just like what happens to a, can happen to anybody in any period, and is perhaps happening to a lot of people today. You know, he could have given up, but one of the smart things he did, at, I suppose, at the time, is to put his money around his in his belt. So when he jumped overboard, at least he had that. So that was great. I just thought that part of the story was a great story and wanted to share it with everyone that's on the board and those who might come by later to listen to the show, because people do come by later to listen. So with that said, I am going to, I noticed that the board is quite busy tonight. We have callers from 718-917, a couple from 718, from 973-954-631. So remember, now this is a labyrinth, and don't let Margaret have to read everything continuously, because as I said, you know, sometimes the type gets very small, and I need help. So anyway, let's go back to this lady's article. And incidentally, this article was written several years ago. But as it mentioned, he was part Jewish. You know, his father was a German Jew. So I think that another article mentioned that they came out of Portugal or someplace like that, which we did a show on the different ethnic groups that came to Jamaica and when they came. So if you are interested in finding out a little more about why Jamaica is so mixed and so diverse, you might want to check in the archives and check out some of those shows, because then I gave the precise dates that each group came, why they came, when, where they came from. Very interesting stuff. And a lot of that, which some of what I'm going to use tonight too, is from Pieces of the Past, which is several articles that was done by Dr. Rebecca Tortello. So I really want to thank the people who have really contributed to bringing to life, you know, some of our history that would have been lost, because I don't know if anyone on the board learned about any of this in school, but I know I certainly didn't. And perhaps even if it was available, I would not have been interested to it then when I was a teenager. So I am really thrilled that I have access to it now. And I call what I am doing now is bringing a voice to the stories. Because a lot of people don't have the time to read, or, you know, they don't like to read. But all of this information that I share is right online, so you have access to it. So let's get back to what this article had to say. Now, when with its elegant single staircase, now let's talk about a little bit about, you. We said that he bought the property. She's now describing, I suppose, what she saw, because it's someone who did a little research who must have gone to Jamaica to Devon House. With its elegant single stairs in the grand lobby, European antique and handcrafted mahogany furniture, Devon House was a sight to behold. Its many bedrooms with their southern style verandas, grand ballroom, library, gaming room, grand Wedgwood ceiling, and exquisitely carved fanlights above the doorways earned Devon House the coveted National Monument honor bestowed by the Jamaican National Heritage Trust. But the fairy tale takes tale on Hope Road began to unravel for the Stabells in 1892. His wife died in 1895. Their grandson died of typhoid. And a week after that, Richard Hill Jackson died. Heartbroken again, and in his 70s, George died in 1896, leaving behind his beloved Devon house. After Teresa Sewell's death in 1922, Devon House was sold to Reginald Machado, another successful Jewish Jamaican entrepreneur whose descendants had been forced to leave Portugal during the Spanish Inquisition. He lived in the mansion for 5 years, and in 1928, passed the torch to another member of Jamaica's Jewish community. The new owner, Cyril Lindo, was described as a Jewish family that fled to Costa Rica and Jamaica to keep from becoming Christian converts during the Inquisition. Lindo lived in Devon House until his death in 1960 at the age of 89. So it's interesting because, you know, it was George's dream to build this house. And, of course, his father was Jewish. And twice after that, it was passed down to another person of the same, you know, background and the same reason why they came to Jamaica or their forefathers came to Jamaica. So I thought that was really interesting. And I want to ask anyone on the board if they remember or have any pictures of what Trafalgar Square was in the old days, because, you know, 1960 was not so long ago. And I remember going to Hope Gardens, as we discussed last week, several times. But for somehow in my memory bank, I don't know where it is. I don't remember Trafalgar Square at all. I really don't remember, you know, the landscape and how it looked. I don't remember that. And I thought it would be so nice to have some pictures, some old pictures. So if anyone on the board have access to or know where I could get some, I'd really love to know. And incidentally, I'm inviting everyone to take a look at backadlavish.com because, you know, we are planning to upgrade the site and really make it more current. But you can send me information through that medium, you know, just in your email address, just put info@backyardlavish.com and it will get to me. And I'm always open to have suggestions from the fan base as to what you'd like to hear us talk about. Just remember that we want to keep it in the mode of celebrating, enlightening, and preserving the culture as we knew it. Because, you know, things are changing in Jamaica like the rest of the world, and the way of doing things now, even communication, is totally different than it was in our times. So I am trying to bring to life some of the things that might not have been available to us when we were growing up. So I hope that you're enjoying the show, and I am going to go on with this lady's thing for a little while, and then I'm going to talk about our present day maverick. And I think you will see some of the connections in terms of the drive and passion of a person wanting to do something, a dreamer, you know, someone that really is focused on their dream and really decides at an early age. Because, you know, this George, a lot of the Jamaicans in that period were well educated, because Dr. Lumsden has brought to light a lot of stories about different colleges that we didn't even know existed in the 18-somethings, and different names that we're quite familiar with. I was, when I was growing up, that their forefathers graduated from those schools and things they did. So, but George wasn't, you know, he left school at 14. And at 19, he was working on a ship. So it's really quite interesting to me. So let's go back to what she had to say about him right here. Now, the new owner, Cecil Lindo, was described... I read that already. Now, like Stabell, Lindo left Devon House to his family. It was Linda's wife who was approached by developers to sell it in 1965. However, under the National Trust Act, the Jamaica government stopped the developers from demolishing the mansion and began their own restoration process in 1967. George Stabell's life story is a testament, you know, to dreamers and people who really made a difference in their lives. But I read in another article that it was really part of the restoration was really initiated and was made put into place by Mr. Siaga. So I was very thrilled when I saw that because, you know, the Abbey Court, as it was before, I forgot that whatever the name, I think Abbey Court was the name, was demolished. That's why I'm asking if anyone have pictures of what it was before. It's now condominiums and gorgeous shops and all of that stuff. But this one, Devon House, almost got the axe. And I don't remember if we discussed that the last time we spoke about Devon House. So now let me see if there's anything else interesting in this article before I talk about, and I'd like to take some questions or input from members from fans on the board before I talk about our present day Maverick. All afternoon I've just been so thrilled with this young man. He's in his early 50s. But his story is so fascinating, and I cannot believe how the universe is so good to me because it just brought it to me when I needed it. And there's a lot of information about him that never came up before. So are there any callers on the board that want to weigh in while I get my papers together for, or I wonder if I should talk a little bit more about Devon House itself. I'm sure most people on the board may be Jamaicans or Jamaicans and perhaps are familiar with what Devon House is today. But I will just, because of the restoration, I mean, it is absolutely gorgeous, I understand. And they still have the original chandelier that was bought by George for the structure. So let me read you a little bit about the Devon House today. The Devon House Development Company, which became operational in February of 2002, is now responsible for the Devon House redevelopment project, intended to further highlight the historical relevance of the house and continue its preservation and renovation. The redevelopment project includes landscaping, historical restoration, and the establishment of a new business venture intended to help increase the property's self-sustainability. The Waterloo Road entrance and the East and West lawns, which will be marketed for special cultural events, are slated for major landscaping work. I suppose this is old and all of this work is done already. A private garden is also to be developed. And if anyone on the board knows if all of this is done, please educate the rest of us. Marketing the house itself as a museum, the establishment of a plant nursery, and museum shop, the construction of restrooms and an inboard store, and the restoration of shops recently burnt down by fire, tour of the Devon House are currently available. So you can have a tour of the house itself. And I'd like to ask now, has anyone on the board been on a tour of the house since it has been restored and would like to share any of that with us, please let me know by hitting 1 on your telephone. That will indicate to me that you want to join the library, and I'll be happy to open up the mics. In the meantime, let me remind the callers that you're listening to Backyard Library on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each week at 8 o'clock on a Wednesday, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And this week, we're talking about a past trailblazer, as I have donned him. He was a trailblazer that has left his mark on not only Jamaica, but the world, because this article I was reading to you was written by a Canadian, so people all over the world, I'm sure, will be really intrigued, because I'm sure when they tour the house, they're telling the story, which is a marvelous story. So, you know, he has really left a mark, and I hope that, you know, not only Jamaicans, but anyone listening to the program, there's so much that we can learn and apply to our lives now on situations in our communities, in our families, when we look into positive stories of the past and see that, you know, as humans, we're exposed to similar things now as they were in 18 whenever, when George was doing his thing. So, you know, he survived, and I'm sure that things were a lot, perhaps more difficult then than they are now, that we're so modern and we have so much at our fingertips that we can just press a button and presto. And a lot of that, you know, the kids are growing up now where they're, I saw a picture in a magazine the other day where a little baby was sitting looking at a magazine of something that looked like it was a computer, and there they were, a picture of them trying to push on the paper to see if something would move. So I thought that was so relevant to the new way that we get information and absorb information. You know, everything is a push of the button. So for the people who don't have access to or don't want to push the button, tuning in to Backyard Labrish can help to get some of that information to you. So please feel free to visit the archives and see what we have done so far. You might find something interesting. And you can always, you know, just click on it and minimize it while you and listen while you do your little task on your computer, if you are trying to multitask. So now I'd like to talk about our present-day maverick, who happens to be Mr. Wilfred Emmanuel Jones. And this article was sent to me. I'm going to send it out to everyone after the show that on my list, because, you know, they might find it interesting and want to send it to other people. But this was put in the, I think it was from the Gleaner, because he's slated to go to Jamaica late on the 25th of this month, I think. But I've gone to his website and got some marvelous information about him that I want to share. Now, it says, Jamaican-born, UK-based millionaire entrepreneur Wilfred Emmanuel Jones is being brought to Jamaica by National Commercial Bank Jamaica Limited as guest presenter at the NCB's National Builder Award ceremony on October 25th. Describing himself as a poor boy done good, Emmanuel Jones migrated with his parents from Clarendon to the United States in 1950. Today, he is considered a pioneering, non-nonsense food entrepreneur who is on a mission to create the Black Farmer brand of products as Britain's number one chill meat label. In 2004, he blazed onto the food scene with a maverick approach to business, and today his startup sausage business under the Black Farmer label is now valued at over £8 million. The brand has a stable of award-winning products in the chilled meat sector, including various flavors of sausages, bacon, organic, free-range, and corn-fed chicken, sweet, mature cheddar cheese, as well as a range of tabletop sauces, which are sold in high-end stores. In addition, Emmanuel Jones has recently launched the Black Farmer fashion line, including jackets, waistcoats, waistcoats, trousers, shirts, and sheepskin gillets. Now, he has had numerous awards. The classic entrepreneur was an anything is possible, has an anything is possible attitude. He has won many awards, including the National Cheese Award, Britain's Best Banger, BNGR Award in 2010, on and on about all his awards. Now, he received an honorary doctorate in business from the Plymouth University in the United Kingdom. This is him talking. It took me 40 years, but I eventually fulfilled my childhood dream to purchase a small farm in Devon, UK, and then launch the Black Farmer brand. It is here that I keep a small number of cattle. North End, South Devon are my favorites. That must be the name of the cattle, I suppose, which in my view produces some of the finest beef you will ever taste. Emmanuel Jones is quoted as saying on his website, I thank the National Commercial Bank for inviting me to participate in the NCB National Builders Award presentation ceremony, which the bank has initiated to recognize and encourage the entrepreneurial spirit among fellow Jamaicans. It is my hope that my story of perseverance and determination will inspire and motivate the nominees to believe in themselves and be convinced that they can achieve at the highest level, he said. The ceremony is to be held at the Jamaica Pegasus Hotel, New Kingston. So if there are any Kingstonians listening or come online, remember, because I know it's not every day everybody, even in Jamaica, read the newspaper and you might have missed it. So I think that there is some comparison that I would like to make about our past Maverick and our present one, because I got a little more details on his website. First of all, this young man has been, I can tell you, on going to the website, and his website is just as it says, which is www.blackfarmers.com. Is that what I said his name, his business was? Yes, that's the brand name, and that's the name of the website. But he has been referred to in different publications. On the regional level, 14 different articles. On the trade level, 6. International, 2. And national in England, he has been written up, or his product has been written up 62 times. I have gone to the website. I've found this out. He is just very fascinating. He also ran for politics. He ran for some seat. He was not successful, but this is what Wikipedia had to say about him. Emmanuel Jones was born in Clarendon, Jamaica, But in 1961, he moved with his parents to the United Kingdom. They settled in Small Heath in Birmingham, where he was one of nine children living in a small terrace house. Now, I have never been to London, so I have no clue where this place is, Birmingham. I don't know. But it is referred to in some of the writings as an inner city. Now, back to Wikipedia. After leaving school without qualifications, he joined the British Army but was dismissed from the service after a year for poor discipline. He is married and has a son and daughter from this relationship and an adult son from his first marriage. William Emmanuel Jones, born November 7, 1957, is a British businessman, farmer, founder of the Black Farmer. That's the website name, www.theblackfarmer.com. Now, the range of food products, and he started that and was unsuccessful. He was an unsuccessful candidate for the Conservative Party in Chippenham constituency in 2010. Not 1910, 2010. But here now is another young man, present-day Maverick, who did not really graduate school. And just like how George got in trouble, he got thrown out of the army because of some discipline problem. But, you know, it doesn't say here the details of that. But let me go on. After working in the catering industry, Emmanuel Jones enrolled on a training scheme which led to a job working for Peter Bazalgette Bazalgette on the BBC television series Food and Drink. He worked in television, working as a producer-director for 15 years. He appeared on a show called Carpool in 2010, and there was a show on Channel 4, it's called Cameron's Black Troy. Apparently that was the name of the show, and it was filmed in 2010 over a four-year period, and it followed Emmanuel Jones' bid to become the Conservative Party MP for Chippenham. So he apparently got involved in politics. He did not win the seat. But remember when George was trying to help the ex-slaves by getting votes for them. So as I read it, you know, I said, my goodness. But you see, all along with all of this happening, Wilfred had a dream. It doesn't say much about his parents, really. I didn't read that, except that, you know, they migrated with him in 1961, and if you figure he was born in 57, so whatever age he was, you know, he was quite young when he went to London with them. Now, does anyone on the board know the part of London we're talking about and want to weigh in? I see the board is full, folks. You got to. This is a Labrish. Remember what a Labrish is? And for the visitors who may come by later on, foreigners that have gone to Jamaica and come by because they Googled something, a Labrish is when people of like minds get together and talk about something and may have an opinion or an insight or, as I call it, put in your two cents. I call it my sidebar when I read and then I go to what I think. But I just find these stories very fascinating because it shows you, you know, when anyone has tenacity, some strength of character. They might get in trouble now and then, you know, sometimes this happens, but it never floors them. They're never down for long. So he said that the television career gave him the capital to buy West Kitchen Farms in Devon, which he continues to farm. So he bought that because he was able to, because of the job he got in television. So, you know, he started off small. I mean, but all along he had a dream of doing something special. Now, so he bought this farm in Devon, don't know where that is, and that is the farm that he is doing all this wonderful things from. And apparently his sausages and sauces are very popular, because I have seen some of all this write-up I tell you in the different publications is about award for his sausage and, you know, his farm. And he featured in many different publications all over England. Now, he became known to the locals. This is after he got to Devon. He became known to the locals who helped him initially with farming as the black farmer, which inspired the brand of the same name, whose products include award-winning sausages, chicken, ham, and sauces. He's now doing beef, too, because on his website I see where he's packaging. You know, you can buy a box of different cuts of meat. He has since become involved in setting up the Black Farmer Scholarship, which aims to help and encourage ethnic minorities to work in the rural community, an area where traditionally they have been underrepresented. This has been made into a Channel 4 TV series, which is called Young Black Farmers, a series of three, which sees him take a group of 9 inner-city school leavers from ethnic minorities on a scholarship on his Devon farm. And I thought that was really so nice, because what he's actually doing is taking these kids and showing them that, you know, just like it's happening in Jamaica now, I think people, sons and daughters of farmers, are drifting away from the farm. And it's not, I suppose, romantic. It's not financially rewarding or as financially rewarding as it could be or used to be. And farming is not very popular anymore. I don't know for the rest of the world, but I don't think it is in Jamaica. And if I'm wrong, people on the board, put up your hand and correct me. Remember, it's a Labrish. But anyway, this young man, and I call him young because, you know, I'm a senior, and he's in his early 50s. So not only is he successful, he's a motivator, and he wants to show young minorities that they can do anything they want. You know, this type of farming in England traditionally is done by English farmers. I don't know if there are a lot more people from a different ethnic background that are successfully farming in England. So if anyone on the board know anything about this, please let me know, because I'm learning as I go along. And incidentally, most times, you know, when I'm researching anything, I don't have time to read it, so I just read a couple of paragraphs perhaps and then copy it so I can share it with everyone. So if I'm fumbling around, you know why. So this is what he says. I guess the poor boy's done good beef describes me. I was born in Jamaica, and then after my parents came to the UK in the 1950s, I was raised in inner city Birmingham. It was there that my dream to own a farm began, as I, the eldest boy, had the responsibility of helping my father tend the family allotment. From a family of 11, living in a small two-up, two-down, the sense of space and freedom that the allotment provided instilled in me a love of being outdoors, nurturing plants that would provide much-needed food for me and my family. That was the beginning of a long journey. Isn't that beautiful? Unqualified but ambitious and persistent, I talked my way into television, becoming a producer-director for the BBC. I am credited with bringing many of the top celebrity chefs to the small screen, including, and he have a list of names here. I don't think we know those names. They must be British chefs. Before founding a food and drink marketing company in London. It took me 40 years, but I eventually fulfilled my childhood dream to purchase a small farm in Devon and then launch the Black Farmer brand. It is here that I keep a small number of cattle. North and South Devon are my favorites, which in my view produce some of the finest beef you will ever taste. As I don't have sufficient space on my farm for many animals, as a passionate supporter of British farming, all the meat used in the Black Farmer products come from British quality assured farms around the country. Flavors without borders is the promise offered by my products. Also goes way to sum up my personality. I will not be confined by race, convention, or traditions. I have strong opinions on issues such as rural affairs, justice for small producers, and giving young people more opportunity. In 2005, I launched a rural scholarship scheme through which young people from inner cities, communities, are given the opportunity to experience what it is really like to live and work in the rural community. Home and enjoy a stay on my farm, deep in the West Country on the Devon-Cornwall border. You can book a stay. He also has some place he renovated, so you can book a stay there. That's what I'm reading from his website now. Stay in the delightful Scarlett's Barn, named after my daughter, and featured on Channel 4 Young Black Farmers scene, where it was the picturesque base for the first Black Farmers Rural Scholarship. I came across West Kitchenham Farm on a family holiday 10 years ago, and it was love at first sight. In the same family for generations, the house was badly run down and in such mess, need of restoration, and a lot of TLC. Having restored the main farmhouse, I started on the traditional stone barns. Scarlett's Barn was first to be renovated as it was in very poor condition. Now beautifully appointed and hosting some of the finest views across the rolling hills of Devon and Cornwall. It nestles in pure tranquility, making it the perfect place for a perfect break. Now, I can tell you that some of his stories really are really, really quite interesting, because some of the volumes that he's the publications that he's featured in, you know, he tells a story about whatever. He's in the church newspaper, different villages newspaper. So he's had several adventures, and he seems to be quite a family man. But I really just thought that there was a lot of similarities in the two stories, because here is a young, we'd have to call him for the time when he really started out, he didn't have a formal education, and he has no degrees. He didn't went to any of the London universities, just like George. And the difference here is that I don't know, it doesn't say that his family or father helped him to finance what he did. In George's case, it was so. But in this man's case, he used his tenacity, I suppose, to get into an industry that could be financially rewarding to him. And with his gold in mind, he used that opportunity to accumulate what he needed, which was to his dream to own a farm. And I'm sure he has been featured in Good Housekeeping. I mean, just all different national magazines that we know about. I encourage you to go check him out at his website. He ships. There's a note there that says if you're calling in from another country for a shipment, you can't ship it. Book it online. You'll have to call so they can know what the shipping cost is. But he seems to have a very thriving business. And I was really quite touched by the fact that he... Can anybody tell me if the Birmingham, if anyone is familiar with where he's talking about as an inner city in Birmingham, England? Do I have a hand on the board to help me in figure out what kind of inner city he's talking about? And to be very frank with you, I've never been to London, never really had a desire. Now I'm thinking I want to go to the Scarlet House because he has that particular barn or something fixed up for guests. And it sounds so picturesque and beautiful and tranquil that I think I need to get some of my fans and go check it out. So with that said, folks, I have been talking a long time. Oh, I see a hand raised at 718, and I am going to open up the mic and welcome 718-379 to the backyard. Good evening. You have Margaret. Who do I have?
Yes, this is Lay. You were talking about Birmingham.
Uh-huh.
It would
Where are
be
you calling
like
from, Lay?
Brooklyn.
Okay.
It's really more of an inner city type location, Birmingham.
Uh-huh.
And it's north of London.
Yeah, well, when you've never been to London, that don't really mean much. So what I'm saying, would you be, we don't have to be politically correct, but would you call it sort of a ghetto?
No, you really can't, because it's so big, and if you're looking at it from the point of view of a lot of minorities,
uh-huh,
then you might want to call it a ghetto. But
well, because a ghetto is not necessarily a disparity. It's just a lot.
Well,
of
when you say ghetto, it connotes a smaller place, sort of.
Yeah, right.
This is Birmingham is quite large.
I see.
And with the influx of the they call them their South Asians, which includes Pakistani and Indians, and you know, but if you can't go wrong if you say people of color.
Okay, so actually, would you call it a middle class area or a poor area?
Working class area is better.
Okay, good. So now I have a better picture. So because he terms himself as a poor boy done good. Now, what is an allotment? He talked about an allotment to that allowed him to expand this love for being loved.
Well, you know, it's like you in terms of the United States to understand their system, you go in to one of these agencies. And in this case, you go and like for a farm loan, and you present your case, and if it passes the muster, so to speak, you get your money, and you start your business.
It's not like property. It's not property. It's assets. It's money.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I probably use the money to buy the property. Who knows, you know?
Oh, okay. I thought when I read it, I got the impression that it's someplace where he could plant something or so. When he talked about his allotment that gave him the love of being outdoors. Oh, it could be after he bought the property. I don't know.
Right. He got this. Monies, which is the allotment, and then he bought the property.
Oh, I see. But, okay, well, thanks for filling me in there.
But Devon, in terms of Birmingham, it's a far a good ways off, further north, and it's very rural. To the inner city, and of course you would have there what they would call gentleman farmers. You know, it's like it's on that scale that he would set himself up in that area, and then apparently he's built himself up. Not just from farming, but he's into what they would call a pretty boy industry. He's got his own
line of clothes, and they're hot.
Yes,
really hot.
And it seems just by I'm on the computer and I'm looking at him. With these different things, and he looks very industrious.
Oh yes, well, the whole I think of him as a Renaissance man. Now, and remember, George was in different things too. You know, he wasn't real. And if one thing didn't work out, he switched to something else.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of lesson that we have to learn from people like that, especially mostly the lesson for the young people, and encourage them that, you know, as long as you keep your eye on the goal, how you get there, I mean, you really want to get there legally. I'm not suggesting anything else. But the thing is, sometimes you have to diversify. And sometimes even when you get to the goal, now people can, you know, expand and be involved in a lot of things, just like the music people are in different industry. They're not just selling records. They have other things that bring them money. And the movie star is the same way.
Yeah, which is what he did. I mean, he bought the farm, and I guess he had choice cattle, and he produces, you know, these boxed beef products. You've probably seen them in catalogs where you send for different cuts of beef, and they're not cheap.
Right,
and
right.
He also
available in high-end stores. So,
yes. Produces sauces. You know, different kinds of sauces. Of course, we'll mention his clothing range. So it looks like he's not going to stop there, you know.
No. But the important thing is that, you know, although he's where he is, he hasn't forgotten where he came from.
Hardly, yes.
He's giving back to the community. And that's what I think stands out. And he is going to leave a legacy because right now he's making a mark. Because I don't think there's no mention in any of the publications that I read a little bit about him that there's anyone else like him, meaning someone of color, that is at the level that he is. And
yeah, well,
I am,
you know, if at first you don't succeed, he ran for office and he'll probably do it again when he starts.
Right.
When he starts to mellow a little bit, you know, get a little older and relegate all this kind of work to either his siblings or children or whoever. He probably wants to settle down and be a part of the establishment community.
It mentioned that he's a member of the Conservative Party. I don't know too much about the politics, and of course, we don't really go into politics on this show, and that part of it is sort of irrelevant to me. But I do encourage listeners on the board to go check it out. I think it's just fascinating. There are several publications that he has been mentioning, and I read a couple about them. You know, he said that when he bought the farm in Devon, I mean, he was even asked to be, like, to cheer some big thing. His color was not a problem. He mentioned that he did not. But when people enter something with confidence, even if their challenge is there, they don't see them. They just step over them, walk through them, find a way through them, and it's not a problem. They don't dwell on it. And so there's a lot of lessons to be learned when people look into, you know, the people who have been successful and how they got to it. A lot of times people see someone as a success, but they don't really know how they got there. And it's in the story, within the story, the lessons lie. Because,
yeah,
you know, they don't start off being a success in some cases.
Yeah, well, you know, it's very typical, I would say, of a Jamaican person that they don't feel restricted by color in most places. If they have something they want to sell, they just up and sell it. If you don't want to buy, they don't care. They keep moving on. That's the impression I got from this guy. He's not going to be confined with a Jamaican black man restricted to certain things. Wherever he sees an opportunity, he's going to capitalize on it, and that's exactly what he did.
In one of his articles, he mentioned that he has found it difficult to encourage the people from, especially the ethnic background that he's from, to relocate to the country. They don't want to do it, even if they are from a background of farmers, you know, because coming from Clarendon, I don't know, it didn't say if his father was a farmer or, you know, what part of Clarendon he came from. But we would call him a country boy, you know, when he was young. He was coming from the country, but he still had the love of the country with him, in him. A lot of people from small farming towns now, you know, they want to get the heck out of there. You know, the same thing like is happening in Jamaica. A lot of the children of the farmers are not staying in farming.
Right.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, but just abandoning the idea of farming being of importance. One of our guests last week spoke about that, you know, how it was sad to see the school close down because it played such an important part. And I think now that the younger generation all over is more interested in just things that is related to technology and things that are easier.
Yeah, they don't want to get their hands dirty.
Right, right, right. But here is a true story of someone right here and now who is in trying to encourage young children to look into things like that and be a part of nature, because he brings them out to the farm, and I think they live there for a while or stay there for a while. But I think it's quite interested and quite admirable of him. I really enjoyed just researching it and sharing it with everyone. So I do hope that the callers on the board enjoyed the story as much as I did. And Leah, I thank you so much for enlightening me, because I don't know why. I never really had an urge to ever, when my friends were going to England, I came here instead, you know, so...
I like trains, and I like to go from London north as far as I can go. And the countryside, just on a train, you don't expect to see too much on train tracks. But you go right past these towns, it's unbelievable, really. I did the same thing in Canada. I went from Toronto to Vancouver on a train, and it's fabulous.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Let me just ask, is there anyone on the board that would like to weigh in on this story or have anything to contribute? Because if you don't, then we're going to be signing off soon. So put up your hands. I want to thank you all for being here, and to remind our callers and those who may come by later that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio, and we're here each week on a Wednesday where we at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And I don't know for the rest of the callers on the board, but I know I am not planning to go back there to reside. I'm a Southern Belle now, and perhaps will be for the rest of my life. So, but I still love my culture and love my country. And what we do here on a Wednesday is try to get stories that help to expand our knowledge, because when I go back in the past, there are lots of stories that I never knew before I came to this country, because I did not get a lot of history about my own country when I was there. So these stories are very fascinating to me, and I'm very excited about sharing them. So I hope that you're enjoying them as much as I do. I'm going to open up the mic to 631-451. Good evening. You are in the backyard with Margaret and Leigh. Who do I have?
Hi, Margaret, Leigh. This is Janine from Long Island.
Hey, Janine.
Hi.
Where have you been?
Well,
welcome
you,
to the backyard.
Yes.
What are you drinking this evening? Are you in your favorite chair?
Yes, I am. My bed.
Okay. Well, welcome to the backyard. We have lots of callers on. What would you like to share?
Well, I just want to say the both stories were so interesting, and to see they didn't have any background going to college or anything. But as usual, perseverance will let you conquer, and that's what they had, determination. And it's really good to hear, you know, somebody from your country, at least two people from your country that really succeed in whatever they wanted to do, you know. And I think
look at the gap in between.
I know.
Can imagine that in the 18-whatever, it was difficult for...
Yeah.
I'm assuming, you know, for someone like George, and there were a lot of well-educated black people around that time, because as I mentioned, you know, Dr. Lumsden had brought a lot of those to light.
Yeah.
And he had a handicap because he wasn't pure either one.
Yes, yes.
So, but it never slowed him down.
I know. And Devon House, I think, Leigh, we'll be able to say if this is true or not. I think now they have like a lot of stores there.
Oh, yes.
And an ice cream parlor that sells the best ice cream.
Right, yes.
But it's so different up there now with the stores and, you know.
Right. There's a beautiful picture. If anyone's listening online, you should be getting a flash. Now we have a flash going. And I was able to get a picture of Devon. I don't know if it's since it's restored or it was the original. But, Janine, do you remember Trafalgar Square before it was made into condominiums as it is now? Do you remember that area? It was called Millionaire's Row. I didn't know that at the time.
Trafalgar Square. The name is familiar, but tell you the truth, Margaret, it's such a long time, I don't think I could give any information on it, but yes, I did know about it. But lately, he goes to Jamaica a lot. He should know.
No, well, I'm not talking about the now because they have, you know, they've torn down Abbey Court. That is what I was thinking.
Abbey Court, yes.
Abbey Court was another. There's not much documentation. I have to look in that encyclopedia.
Yeah,
to
but
see
Trafalgar Square
Abbey
was
Court.
Very popular in those
Abbey
days.
Abbey Court still exists. What do you call it?
The original house has been restored?
Well, it's whatever was there before, I'm not quite sure, but I know that I visited friends in Abbey Court.
Abbey Court, it's mentioned here, was part of this Millionaire's Row, so apparently it was a residence.
What I'm about to say is that whatever it was, they demolished most of those residences and they made townhouses.
Houses, yes.
Right.
I know a few people in Abbey Court. It's still a very elite location.
Location, yes, it is.
Yeah, but the original Abbey Court and some place called Finzis, Rekdom. That was the three structures that made a part of this Millionaire's section. Three of the island's richest men built it. The Verley family built the Abbey Court.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel, the last name is spelled F-I-N-Z-I.
Finzi, I knew him well. He was sort of a...
And that place was called Rekadom, two separate words.
Yeah.
I knew
Finzi. He was like an oddball. You know, he was a scientist, actually. But his love was in model planes. And,
A good friend of his,
and they would go, like, on weekends, Sundays, and fly model planes. Build it from scratch, you know.
Right. But what I'm saying is that this family goes back to the 18-something.
He was...
Original owners.
I would think he was Jewish, too. He looked like, and the name sounds Jewish. But in those days, we weren't concerned with
color.
Color or, you know, those kinds of things.
Background.
Yeah.
But I know this guy was a weirdo, we would call him in today's parlance. He was, you would think he was a bum, you know, and he dressed like a bum. But this guy had more money than anything else. And in those days, he lived in... the area that we used to live, like on Camperdown Road, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on a big piece of property.
Well, I'd like to ask any of the listeners on the board, if anyone have any old pictures of what that area looks like, it would be very nice to share it with the rest of the world. So if you know of anyone who happens to have a picture... And I know I did a show once about a legend of a house in Port Antonio, I think. And I end up finding that there was a great-great-great-grandchild, grandperson of that original owner of that house. And they had pictures that reputed the legend or how it ended. And I thought that was really quite interesting. So if there are any descendants of any of these families that might have any pictures of the way it was, Backyard Labrish would really appreciate if you could share it with us or whatever you would like to share with us of how that area looked. Because that's why I think it's so important for the folks, the Jamaicans in the senior class, as in age, to leave their stories and their opinions and their memories, share it with the rest of the world by being a guest on Backyard Labrish to talk about things you remember, how they were, because, you know, by the next 20, 50 years, things will be totally gone from our period when we were growing up in Jamaica. I mean, there mightn't be any pictures, no stories, unless we make them, unless we make the stories. Because we did not have the medium that is now available to the generation now.
Yes.
And to us, too. But, you know, we can't go back and record, because I had some pictures that I took in Hope Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, you know, when I was perhaps 10 or 12,
yeah,
and they all got destroyed in the fire, so I don't have them anymore.
Yeah, but
so we now can, when we post a picture online in the clouds on our website, or even put it on a CD or something, you know, it's going to be there after we're gone. So people will know what things look like, because now I can't even remember what that millionaire's area looked like. And I know that I've been there because my grandparents had some property in Hope Gardens. And my mother used to take me up there quite often, so it's quite likely that I have seen it. But somewhere it's lost in the memory bank. Perhaps at the time I didn't push save, so it's gone forever. You know, like you're on the computer now, if you don't save the document, and so they're getting so smart now that sometimes even if you don't save the document, you can still retrieve it
right
after you've clocked out. But I hope it will come back. But I want to thank the callers on the board again and invite you to come back next week when we'll try to have an interesting story for you. Or if you want to be part of the story, why don't you just send me an email and tell me you've got something to labrish about and you would like to. We're still doing the Remember Your School Days thing, so we will just go back and forth to that whenever we have a guest. So if you know someone who would like to share their stories, there's a lot of colleges that I've heard about that we have not covered yet. I've heard about Buxton and Southermere, and somebody mentioned a couple of others that there's not much documentation on. And if someone knows someone who graduated from any of those schools that we have not yet recorded online verbally, they might be written. But, you know, people are so busy nowadays, they don't have time to read, but they'll listen. So do share your stories with us and encourage your friends to do the same. And if you're not yet on my mailing list and would like to know what we're going to be talking about each week, please just drop me a line at Backyard Labrish or go there and fill out one of our little forms. We have a website that is functional. So with that said, Mr. Lay and Miss Janine, I thank you for participating. And all the callers on the board, and we have several this evening, and those listening online, I do appreciate your support. I hope you will come often and tell your friends to come along with you. Grab someone and make a chair for them and welcome them to the backyard. And do let us hear your voice. Either write me or put up your hands. So we do have 5 more minutes. So So if anyone on the board would like to weigh in, we'd love to welcome you. So going once, going twice, and three strikes, you're out. So I see no hands. So, Mr. Lay, thank you so much for filling in the old lady about Birmingham and the inner city of London.
Very welcome.
Isn't that where all the Jamaicans usually go, to Birmingham?
I don't have a clue.
That's one of the places.
Really?
Yes,
oh.
I always hear of the Jamaicans going to that area, you know.
Ah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Are there any Brits online or people who have been to England or visited or went to school or anything? Would you like to share some information with us? Or if you know more than all the old fogies that are talking now, pardon me, Mr. Lay, Miss Janine, I'm talking for myself.
Speak for yourself, yeah.
Do let me know. But I see there are no hands, so I hope you've enjoyed the show and you have enjoyed hearing about old George and young Wilfred,
mm-hmm.
and that you will perhaps come back again and share with us. So with that said, I want to bid you all good night and to thank you for encouraging me to continue to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, because I'm sure we all love it. So make it a great week, and I hope to see you next Wednesday at 8 o'clock, same time, same place. I'll have a nice drink ready for you.
Wow.
So come on by. Bye.
Good night.
Alright, God bless. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being here.
Bye.
Bye-bye, darling. Okay, y'all. I'll see you next week. Bye.